From the Map Room of Heart House in the University of Toronto, it's Sugarcat Music. Welcome to Sugar Camp Music. It's Steve Fruitman with you. It's the last of the Sugar Camp shows. Yes, this is the very last one, and we're going to be doing a feature on Don Franks, Canadian actor, singer, dancer, comedian, chameleon, all sorts of great things. And we're going to be talking about Lord Buckley, as well as Lenny Bro, who you hear in the background here. And the show will start in a few minutes with Don Franks. Lenny Bro, when he was 15 years old, off a CD called Wonder Boy, and I have Don Franks with me here in the studio. How you doing, Don?
Too good, Steve. Just too good.
That's illegal.
You know what? It seems to me like you just used the word, you know, chameleon.
Chameleon.
Or chameleon. I like to say chameleon. It's got a nicer flavor. But I feel that Lenny Bro was just that. He was so capable of playing for us music from everywhere, exactly the same way that people from everywhere play their music. And I just hearing I'll See You in My Dreams, which was the name of the song you just played, you could have maybe swore that was Chet Atkins playing the guitar. And yet Lenny was only 15 years old at that time, is that correct?
That's correct.
Wow.
Just 15 years old. Recorded that in Maine, and then the family went to Winnipeg, where he stayed for a number of years, before he came to Toronto and met you.
Yeah, well, I met his daddy here, and I met his mommy in Maine, but I met his daddy here in a motel. We went out to visit him one time. I guess he was on the road. And so Lenny and I stayed together quite a few years, actually, off and on. But what an amazing human being he was. What a great player. What a musical mind. Absolute genius.
His father, of course, was a country and western performer, Hal Lone Pine, Harold Bro, from the state of Maine. But he married a Canadian, and Betty Cody was
Betty
from Canada.
Betty Cody, that's right.
And they toured as the Lone Pine Show, and Lenny joined. He quit school at the age of 14 to play guitar full-time in his dad's band.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him. When you have... I don't know what you want to call it. Is it a gift? It's just he would not be long in der Schule. I mean, in the Squalus or in the. he needed to play music.
Would you like to hear Betty Cody talk about Lenny, how he started playing the guitar and the accordion?
Everybody would love to hear what Mama has to say about her boy.
Off of Boy Wonder, this is Betty Cody.
We're here to talk about Lenny Bro, also known as Lone Pine Jr., and sometimes just called Sonny, in his early days, especially when I got involved with him at 15 years old. But we're going to ask Betty some questions about his music upbringing. So, Betty, let me ask you this question. As a child, what age did you first see a sign that Lenny was interested in music?
We used to rehearse in our barn. We had a big home and a barn, and we used to have all our mics out, everything out there to rehearse, and amplifiers, and once in a while he would listen to us, you know. And I remember one day we were singing The Cattle Call, Lone Pine and I, we were rehearsing.
That was an Eddie Arnold number, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Eddie Arnold, and I used to do the second part, and all of a sudden we hear Lenny, just a little fella, about three, and he started doing the third part.
Harmony.
Of harmony, perfect. At the age of about 5 or 6 years old, he was living with some friends of ours that was in Canada. And one of the young fellows there had a guitar, and he used to love to practice and everything, and Lenny was only about 5 or 6. And Pine had brought him a little guitar at the time, and we knew that he was trying to pick on the guitar, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had left for 3 weeks on the road. We were on tour, and when we came back, Lenny had perfected a number. It was a reel, a jig and reel, whatever it was.
Yeah.
We couldn't get over it.
He
had it down to perfection.
So did he go right to the guitar first, or was there any other instrument that he might have picked
up? Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a funny thing. At about the age of 3, Pine had picked up some little guitar on some lawn sale or something. Not a guitar, a little accordion.
In other words, he had music in him, and he just had to express that music in something.
Yeah.
So if you gave him an accordion, he tried to play the accordion.
Yeah, yeah.
If you gave him an old guitar, he would learn to play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So he had any formal training at all? Was there any teacher involved where he took music lessons or anything like that?
No, it was all by ear, whatever he learned, and we never pushed him. It was in him, and he wanted so much to play music, and so we let him. He didn't have any formal training until he was about 23.
Betty, I'm wondering how much influence you had on young Lenny. So you definitely, he had genes from your side of the family.
Yeah.
And you obviously had some influence on him in performing.
Oh, yes, yeah. I had always told him that in order to be success, first you have to be humble. You can't just get out there and think that you're it, you know. You've got to be humble and please your audience.
He also liked other people. We noticed that when he was involved at Event Studios, that he got along very well with the other musicians.
Oh, yeah.
There was never any ego trip or
animosity. No, Lenny never was like that. No, and he always admired every musician, even if the musician made errors or mistakes or this, he'd always have a good word for everybody, you know. Even if they didn't play well, he'd say, well, hey, don't forget, he's got a good sound.
When did he start traveling with with the group?
At the age of 14.
At the age of 14.
Yeah, he left school. He left school, and the principal of the school, we had a talk with him, and he says, Lenny is a born musician, so you cannot stop him.
Gene Hooper was a long time on WWVA, and one of the guitar players I heard on Gene's show over WWVA many times was an electric guitar player, and he was from Maine, wasn't he?
Yeah.
What was his name?
Raymond Couture. He used to go by Little Abner.
Little Abner.
Little Abner. He was our comedian.
Was he an influence on Lenny?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because as Abner, Ray, I should call him, he saw Lenny grow up. And he could tell. He says, that boy is going to play guitar.
Did you ever see any time when he was sitting around with Lenny, maybe learning, Lenny would be learning some chords?
Oh, definitely. Backstage at the Jamboree in Wheeling, Lenny used to come there. He was about 12 at the time, and Lenny was really into it then, you know. And he would watch Abner take all those big chords, you know. And
yeah, he could play orchestration chords, large chords.
Yeah. And Lenny had small hands, but he would reach, you know, and he would get them. And in no time at all, he knew all the orchestration chords, and his ear was so good that he could fit in with anyone.
So it's been a pleasure talking to you, Betty.
Same here.
Cody, Bro, Bennett. And many, many years of still performing.
There you go, Betty Bro. What did you think of that, Don, listening to that? Don Frank's my guest here on the Sugar Camp today.
Steve, what are you going to say about what a mama says about her boy? But she did have a very special son. And to this day, of course, everybody realizes just how special he was. It's so surprising that they talked about WWVA Wheeling, West Virginia, because before I met Lenny, I had put together a routine about WWVA Wheeling, West Virginia, on which I would sell Bibles, called the Pliable Bible. Also sell some guitar lessons, mark your card G for guitar. Don't get that mixed up with B for Bible. And then I met Lenny, and Lenny started to talk about WWVA Wheeling, West Virginia, and hence We used to do that sometimes all the time when we were on the road. And sometimes we would tell the audience that were out there that we were from Wheeling, West Virginia, and this was a special broadcast, and would you please give applause when I give you the cue? And it was insane. Of course, when we did the guitar lessons, Lenny would... it was phenomenal by the time you got to lesson 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he moved to Winnipeg with the family. They were on a radio station there for quite a while. And that's when he met young Randy Bachman, back around 1956, 57-ish. And Lenny was born in 1941, so he would have been about 15 at the time, just after he recorded the Boy Wonder album.
Yeah.
Then, of course, he met various musicians there. By 1959, he appeared on a CBC Winnipeg talent show. And you gave me a recording of that.
Yes, somehow I came, that was a gift to me from somewhere over the rainbow. And so, can we hear it now?
I think we can manage it.
Thank you.
Okay, Don.
Horatia Parrott of Winnipeg. Well, that brings us to the final guest of the evening. Here is Leonard Brough.
Leonard Brough. You carry a guitar, I see.
And, yes, sir.
When did this come into your life?
Oh, when I was about 7 years old.
About 7 years old.
Yes.
You're from the States, I believe.
Yes, I'm from Portland, Maine, sir.
Portland?
Portland, Maine.
Uh-huh. And what brings you to Canada?
Well, my dad and mom are in show business, and they're in the Western field of entertainment.
Yes.
So I go wherever they go.
And at the moment, you're sort of making your headquarters here in Winnipeg, are you?
In Winnipeg,
traveling
yes.
around the country. By the way, which type of music do you prefer? You say you're from a Western group, yet I understand you're going to play a little bit of jazz here tonight.
Well, I like jazz the best, but I like Western too, you know. But actually, I like jazz the best.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you have any particular favorite jazz guitarists that you try to emulate their style?
Mr. Johnny Smith is my favorite.
Oh, he's wonderful. Yes. Well, right now, we're looking forward to hearing you play a wonderful old standard called Mean to Me.
Yes, that was Leonard Brough. Well, you've heard our five contestants for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Which one will the judges choose as winner? Will it be Bill Courage, Lorraine Marsh, Peter Shatford, Arisha Perrick, or Leonard Brough? We'll have our judges' decision in just a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have chosen the winner to be Mr. Brough.
Well, congratulations. Looks like jazz is winning out over Western music tonight, huh? Congratulations, and on behalf of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, it gives me very great pleasure to present you with this letter signed by Mr. Doug Nixon, Assistant Director of Radio Networks, which entitles you to $100 in prize money and a date with us in April for the semifinals in Toronto. And the very best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Incredible.
Not bad, eh?
$100.
Yeah, he was given $100. Wow. 1959, that was good money.
Oh, my goodness. But he was playing so phenomenally.
Wasn't he, though?
And
eh?
I heard, which, of course, his four brothers, a very famous thing for four saxophones, a very important jazz tune. And Lenny included that in a couple of times during that solo on Mean to Me. Why are you so mean to me? He's playing so beautiful. Mm-hmm. But you know what I heard just then, and I know you've heard it, but that is he heard the whole orchestra in his playing. In other words, I could hear him when there were saxophone sections that would come in while he was playing, because he was playing three things at one time usually. You usually heard the bass line, and then you heard a melodic line, and then you heard what we call a comping line, which is chung chung, chung, cha chung chung, chung chung.
Which is mostly chords.
Yeah, the like chord, yeah. Little comps. Mm-hmm. But you had dung dung da dung. So naturally, that he would play in the bass strings.
Okay, but I've told people a lot, actually. This is a standard line for me. That Lenny's one of the 10 top guitar players that ever strode upon this sphere.
I know when you and I met, mm-hmm. I remember we shared a common feeling, and that was there were unsung heroes.
Yes.
And usually unsung are the best. And the sung ones have already listened to the unsung hero, and many guitar players, of course.
See, when people listen to him, whenever I play Lenny Brown at home, people think, oh, it's overdubbed, or there's a couple of people playing. And they say, no, there's just one guy.
That's right.
And he's doing three things at one time, as you say, which is phenomenal.
That's what happened in North Hollywood when Joe Pass or somebody was outside having a smoke, and another guitar player came from the parking lot and stood there talking to him and said, holy man, who's the they got three guitar players. Who are blowing in there? And he said, it's one guy. His name is Lenny Brough.
It was nice to hear him call Leonard too, eh?
I love that. And then
it's Leonard Brough.
And at 15, they said, and now Mr. Brough, at 15 years old, here's your $100.
Well, it wasn't long after that he came to Toronto. And he got to got a job playing on Country Hoedown, the country music show that was produced out of Toronto, which was the precursor to the Tommy Hunter show.
Yes, exactly.
And he was on that show for about a year or two in the orchestra. And then somehow along the line, you can explain how you ran across Lenny Brough.
Man, the lawyer that was managing him, called George Cornick, came to me and said, or just called me and said, I don't know why he called me, but he called me and said, I want you to meet somebody. And I came to his house, and Lenny was allowed to stay in the house. And I heard him play, and it just knocked me out. And of course, I started to sing along with him. Lenny heard me sing. And the next thing I knew, we got together, and this time for real. They said, I didn't realize that he had been asked already by Tony Bennett to go on the road with him. And Lenny said, no, man, I'm going to go with Don Franks. And I didn't realize that until, 40 years later.
He had a stutter.
It's funny, one of the reasons I brought the stutter up was because when you played him in the talent contest, I did not hear the slightest hint of a stutter. But then later on, he got a way of talking, like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you had a career going for about 8 or 9 years by that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You started around 54-ish?
Well, that was when I started in...
acting.
No, that would have been when I started in television.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay, so how did you break into the scene?
The music scene, I started singing in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
There was a radio show on CKMO Radio, a station that later on I became a disc jockey, which I'm going to talk to you about after we get this over with. I began to sing on a talent show Saturday afternoon, or Saturday morning, and it wasn't long before they began. I was about 10, and they started, same as Lenny, I guess he started doing things, like really doing things at 10 and 14. And I was called Don Frank Sinatra.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I did bring up the word disc jockey.
Yeah.
You have been doing this show 25 years, and this is the last time you'll be doing this particular show. You'll be starting a new one.
Yeah, that's
very
right.
Shortly.
Yeah.
And it was thanks to people like yourself that introduced me during the 30s to music that I might not have heard had it not been for really good disc jockeys who not only loved the music, but explained the music and kept bringing it out and would even bring things from the past so that I could have a full plate and get a better understanding of music that I could ever get anywhere else. Mind you, there was no television. At that time, there was no internet or no anything like that. So the disc jockey was very important. But to have you here in this university station, which I understand is raising money, so if any of you want to make a small donation at this time, it would be appreciated.
Yeah, CIT.FM.
Absolutely. And we had many that were around at that time to listen to, and I know Lenny would be listening, of course, to the radio too.
The radio was the everything. It was,
yes,
the universe.
It still
brought,
is.
Brought the universe to you.
It still is,
yeah,
really.
It is.
When you think about it.
Okay, so...
Except there's lots of Mick radio out there right now.
Yeah, well, it's mostly that.
Yeah.
You started a trio with Ian Hensbridge and Lenny Bro.
Yeah, Ian Hensbridge, and I had played with before, a fine bass player, who was just branching into the new way of playing the upright bass. He played more lyrically, because it's easy, you know, not easy, excuse me, we were used to so that's like a walking bass.
Yeah.
Okay,
we do that rather well, actually.
Stop it. So we were all used to having, you know, a bass be a percussion instrument.
Yeah.
It was a string, but it was percussionistic. But then all of a sudden with Bill Evans, who Lenny adored, absolutely adored. In fact, I had a chance once to even hang out with Bill Evans here in this town. He used to come over to my coach house and play an old church organ that I had made in Woodstock, Ontario. And Scott LaFaro was playing bass with Bill Evans, and you could hear a whole different way of thinking about how the bass should be, open, not played on the beat all the time.
So if you did a 12 bar, like you just did before,
yeah,
how would that happen?
Oh, I go dun dun, do dun dun. So
Ian was playing more that style?
Yeah, he was playing that style, just starting. Of course, Lenny heard that, and it fit well because none of us seemed to want to have drums with us. We wanted to be drumless.
Yeah.
And that left us the freedom of not, sometimes you can emphatically state the beat, but other times you could leave it airy, lots of air. and room for movement.
So you started performing at clubs around Yorkville?
Yeah, we played.
Which were coffee house. Yeah. I like to differentiate between when the folkies took over and then the hippies took over. Before that, it was more like beatniks, wasn't it?
That's right.
And so you were involved in that type of scene?
Early on, there would be that beatnik type attitude towards mm-hmm. things. And then later on, you know, things got... I don't think the hippiedom really came until, you know...
66, 67.
Yeah, that's right.
It was the folk crowd that kind of took over after a while. But people like Ian Tyson were hanging around the clubs that you were performing in those days.
Yeah, we played. In fact, Ian and I formed a group, you know, Ian and Don. And he would do country things, and I would sing his Western. He was like a very cowboy, still is, very much cowboy.
Yeah,
in fact, Canada's real cowboy.
He's the real deal.
He's the real deal, not like these ones that come down from...
I know
from the excited mistakes of America. So he and I used to do things where I would teach him some folk songs maybe that he did not know, and he would teach me some country and Western things, which I did know, but I wanted to sing harmony with him, so I wouldn't. He would sing harmony with me sometimes on some of the things that I wanted to do.
So you wound up at the Purple Onion for the first time with Ian Hensbridge and Lenny Bro, and it was actually recorded.
Yeah, well, I didn't know it was being recorded. All I knew that we had only been together for, I don't know, whether it was a week. And all of a sudden they said, you know, come to this place called the Purple Onion on Avenue Road.
I'd like to give people an idea of what you were doing at that point in time. You were also into Lord Buckley, who we'll get into next.
Yeah, and Lenny Bruce.
And Lenny Bruce.
Yeah,
and these were some major influences on you, were they?
Oh, very much so.
For how you would carry on with the jazz trio.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So,
and Lenny learned a great deal from that, too.
Oh, did he?
Well, what happened was he began to hear what was going on and the utilization of humor. And next thing you knew, when he started really getting very popular, he started doing some very humorous things, which he had not really done that much before, except he would do some humor just with the guitar. In other words, not with the voice, mm-hmm. but with the guitar.
Of
but
course.
Then he started incorporating his voice, too.
We're going to play the new electric chair.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
This is great.
I just tossed it out. I was like, you know, free-forming.
Of course.
Yeah.
Just like we're doing right now, actually.
You got it.
The warden was sitting there, wondering what to do. He was thumbing through the brochures. And all of a sudden in comes one of the guards with the coffee. He says, "Warden, if you don't mind, I have your coffee here." "Yeah, thank you very much." "Still haven't made up your mind, eh, Warden?" "Oh, it's very difficult to do. This is the first time I've ever had to buy a new electric chair, and it's... it's a real hang. I mean, it would... I wish it was that. The rope's easier to buy. You just go and buy a few yards of rope, and it's over. But this is... Take a look at the brochures, I mean. You know, look what they promise. This one's done in Swedish modern. Very nice. It's approved by George Jensen. It's very beautiful. It's in turquoise. I mean, it would go with some of them. And this one here, look at it. It says, "Live better electrically." I can do that. Another brochure just says, like, "If you're going to go, you might as well go in style, you know. That's the hip model." Here's one in early French Canadian. Well, it's no good because the prison's not near Quebec. You ever been to Montreal, guard? It's fantastic. Up on the hill at night, there's a big cross.
Come on.
And it lights up, and it says, "Go Catholic." Go. But I still have to make up my mind about this new electric chair. Here's a lazy boy. No, I think that's... Let's not let him get too comfortable, you know. They're liable not to mind going. I have a suggestion, Warden. Well, come out with it, man, out with it. You can be sure. If it's Westinghouse. Yeah, I like Montreal. It was a gassing place to be. Montreal has the best police force money can buy. Yeah, it's a good place to work. Yeah.
Since we were children, you shared all my joys. You stole my red wagon and broke all my toys. I'm asking, dear brother, please leave her alone. I forgive you for all of the sorrows I've known. We plan to be married, for I love her, you see. And I'd die if I knew that you'd take her from me. I remember as children in the same grade at school, you were always the smart one, and I was the fool. I remember one night at my first date and dance, you were flirting with her and you ruined my chance. I'm asking, dear brother, please leave her alone. I forgive you for all of the sorrows I've known. We plan to be married, for I love her, you see. And I'd die if I knew that you'd take her from me.
It's you and Lenny singing harmony.
Yeah, and we were singing a song given to, it was given to me. Betty, his mother, Betty Cody, said, "Oh, I'm going to give you this song, Don, and it's called Dear Brother." And I've never heard anybody else do it. And I don't know where the song came from. All I know, it was my gift from Betty Cody, his mother. I love what Lenny did in the arrangement you just played. And that was halfway through, he modulated.
He modulated, yeah.
And went up and then brought it back down again. It's just brilliant.
And he was like, you know, 21 years old, right?
That's right.
Yeah. That was recorded on a different album. That was Don Franks' album called Jackie Gleason Says No One in This World Is Like Don Franks, live at the Village Vanguard in New York City, right?
Yes. We did that because Lenny and I and Ian were playing a place called the Blue Angel, which is also was also owned by Max Gordon, who owned the Village Vanguard. And we had just finished playing Jackie Gleason Variety Show.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Jackie heard me sing a few things when I auditioned for the show, and hence the title of the album, vinyl album, was called Jackie Gleason Says No One in This World Is Like Don Franks.
And he's right.
I hope so.
Full credit to Jackie Gleason there. I want to move on to Lord Buckley now, because we don't have much time and we have a few things to play from him, because he was like one of the most amazing orators of the 20th century, as far as I'm concerned. And again, you talked earlier about unsung heroes. Here is one.
Yes, he is. Hipsters!
Flipsters!
And finger!
Poppin' daddies.
Poppin' daddies. Yeah. Knock me your legs.
Now, you recorded mostly in the 50s, a little bit in around 1960-ish, when he died, I think, in 62.
Mm.
And he was about 50 years old when he died.
This was when the police had stopped him from playing in New York City. It broke his heart.
It did, eh?
It was on a very old marijuana charge. And in New York, you had to have a piece of paper with your fingerprint on it to allow you to... I have mine still from the old days of playing in New York. And you had to have that. And if you didn't have one of those, you couldn't play in a club. They could stop you from playing.
That's amazing. I never knew that.
Yeah, and it broke his heart because he used to say, "My lords and my ladies of the royal court." And his royal court was New York, Manhattan. That was his royal court. And when he found out that he couldn't play there, he could play in California.
So how did you come across him?
My friend Desmond Slattery was a friend. Slattery was a writer and promoter of motion pictures that needed help to get off the ground, and they would hire Desmond Slattery and Jim Moran in order to get these things so people would buy tickets to go to them. They were lame duck movies, but they used to make a thing out of them and make the box office tick. And he was a great friend of the Lord, of Richard.
Richard Buckley.
Yeah, I loved Lord Buckley. I've never known anybody like him, and to this day I still do things of Lord Buckley, giving him the credit, of course.
Well, you know, like when I first heard you talk, I thought, this guy's got to be into Lord Buckley.
You can tell, can't you?
I can tell, because I asked you on the phone right away, right? I said, were you into Lord
Buckley?
You did. And you kind of like, wait a minute, how did you know I was into Lord Buckley?
Exactly.
You know,
well, I was so glad to hear you mention the name.
Mm.
Just as much as anybody who mentions the name Leonard Brough. And also, by the way, we are raising money.
Well, Leonard Brough and Lord Buckley have the same initials.
Oh, boy.
Well, not Richard Buckley, but Lord Buckley.
That's right.
Lenny Brough.
That's right.
We're going to play a cut now. You like Governor Slingwell Slugwell, right?
I love this. This is so...
Isn't this amazing? He does all these sounds and noises and voices and keeps them all in perspective.
And not only that, it sounds like America personified. It really does. This is American politics right here.
Okay, Lenny.
You want that fan on there?
No. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I wish you could be here on this beautiful day to see the sun shining down this magnificent avenue. All the fair ladies about and all the handsome gentlemen are there. For this is the day that everyone is saluting that celebrated international figure, Governor Slugwell. Ladies and gentlemen, I can see him now down in front of the courthouse. Looks like he's getting into this. Yes, he is getting into a magnificent automobile there. Oh, it's shining so bright into the sunshine. And the people are all gazing around trying to say hello to him. And there's an immense crowd gathering. He's got two blondes on each arm, a king-sized boutonniere in his buttonhole, and a pound of 20s in the toolbox. Hooray for Slugwell!
Thank you, my friends.
Lady, will you stand back? What are you trying to get yourself killed? This is a parade, my dear woman. You got the mother of five children, peanuts, popcorn, hot dogs. Hooray for Slugwell!
Thank you, my friends.
And ladies and gentlemen, coming right down in the middle of the boulevard with its golden sunshine shining down on their magnificent uniforms is the pride of the nation, the 707 Elks Drum Corps Negro. Wham, bam, wham, bam. Rub-a-dee-boo-ba-dee-boo. Bam, bam, harum, bam, bam, harum, bam, bam, harum, ba-dee-boo-ba-dee-boo. Lady, will you stand back? That's not the last time I'm going to tell you now. Hot dogs, get them all red hot. Hooray for Slugwell!
Thank you, my friends.
And ladies and gentlemen, here we are at the stadium. Good heavens, I know I sound excited, but I can't help it. There's so much excitement in the air. Oh, this is such a tremendous night. You can feel the excitement. You can feel the enthusiasm jumping. There must be 500,000 people here at the stadium as the Governor Carr swings through into the auditorium and gates, and right in the middle of the field, you can hear these people yell, "Hooray for Slugwell!" And now, ladies and gentlemen, time is short. I'm up here in the observation booth, and we just have time now to turn this over to Senator Gridley down on the platform. Well, he'll introduce this magnificent political deity.
My friends, I would like to say that never in my political history have I ever enjoyed the privilege of presenting such a great beloved man. A human being, not only beloved in this fair country, but beloved world over. His name, the name that's imprinted on every heart in America, Governor Slingwell Slugwell. Hooray! Hooray for the Pam, 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 pam.
My friends, I would like to say that I have never before been greeted by such warmth and beauty. I'll be there in a moment, Mary. Now, I would like to say that things are going so well and so beautiful with me. My Rolls Royces are all running fine. Three more oil wells came in. I just bought the waterworks last week. I've had the gasworks for quite some time. And things are going at such a magnificent rate that I believe that it is possible for each and every member of this great state, the Employees Association, shall receive a substantial raise in salary amounting to pam 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 and 75 cents. And I would like to say that I wish you all a happy, happy time, and you'll be hearing me from me next very, very soon. Thank you and good night.
Hooray for Slugwell! Hooray! What? Hello, Charlie?
Yes, that's right.
That's him. You! Hooray for Slugwell!
Isn't that amazing? Oh, you know what I loved about that was when he first introduced the band. They played at like a very slow speed, but with total soul and rhythm, you know?
That's right.
I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. Talking with Don Franks, Lord Buckley, who's you just heard there. And that's one of his more humorous pieces. Of course, he did the bad rapping of the Marquis de Sade. And then he also glorified a lot of people like Albert Einstein.
Yes, he did. Hip Einie.
Hip Einie, the Hip Gan.
The Hip Gan,
you know,
too,
Mahatma Gandhi. And
also the Nas. Yeah, the Nas.
Which I'm going to play at Christmas time.
Of course you
got to play the Nas for Christmas.
Yes.
Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah.
Done in a hip semantic version.
Thank you.
So we're talking Don Franks about Lord Buckley right now. I'm going to play a piece of yours and then go into another piece by Buckley. And you did a little piece called The Praying Mantis.
Oh, yeah.
Mantis Praying, actually, it's called.
Yeah.
And it's got a little bit of a religious overtone in it.
Yes, it does.
And then Lord Buckley recites a little proverb by, I think it was Paul Newman's grandfather wrote,
that's
called
right.
The Black Cross, right?
The Black Cross, yes.
And it sort of takes us into that beatnik era club.
That's what it's like.
Yeah. Sort of jazz bands, folk singers, and comedians.
And bongos.
Bongos and all that.
That's
yeah,
it.
Of course, bongos.
Yeah.
You have to have that.
And lots of coffee.
Here's Don Franks.
Pardon me, O praying mantis. Pardon me, a smidgen. But of all the insects in this world, you're a real bug on religion. Kneeling on your branch in prayer, talking to someone up there. Are you Jewish? Are you Buddhist? Are you Christian? Or the crudest form of pagan rite? Staying so still, praying mantis. Looking more like the plant than the plant is.
It's a beautiful thing. It's written by Paul Newman's beloved grandfather in Cleveland, a Cleveland poet. It's the Black Cross.
Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya.
There was old Hezekiah Jones of Hogback County. He lived on a hill in a weather-beaten hollow. And all that he owned was a two-acre plot and a bed and some books and a hoe and a shovel. Old Hezekiah, black as the soil he was hoeing. He worked pretty hard to make both ends meet. He raised what he ate with a few cents over to buy corn liquor, which he knocked down neat, and a few cents small that he put in the cupboard against what he called the rain season. But he never got to save more than $2 or $3 till he spent it. For this or that reason, the white folks around New Old Hezekiah said, well, he's harmless enough, but the way that I figure, he better put down them goddamn books. Because reading ain't no good for an ignorant nigger. Reverend Green of the White Man's Church finally got to come over to ask you all about the pearly kingdom and to save your soul for the Lord Jehovah. You believe in the Lord, said the white man's preacher. Oh, Hezekiah puckered his frosty brows. Yes, yeah, I can't say yes. I ain't gonna say it, because I've never seen the Lord nowhere, no how. You believe in the church, said the white man's preacher. Oh, Hezekiah, celebrate, the church is divided. If they can't make up their minds, so I can't either. So I'm just like them. I ain't decided. Did you believe in heaven, said the white man's preacher? Where you go, if and you're good, for your last reward. I'm good, said Hezekiah, good as a maple, but I don't expect nothing from heaven. Oh, dear Lord.
You don't believe in nothing, said the white man's preacher.
No.
yes, I do, said Hezekiah. I believe that a man should be beholden to his neighbor without the reward of heaven or the fear of hellfire. Well, there's a lot of good ways for a man to be wicked. And they hung Hezekiah as high as a pigeon. And the nice folks round said, well, he had it coming. Because the son of a bitch didn't have no religion.
How about the truth? How about the truth?
How about the truth?
Yeah, how about that?
You're listening to Last of the Sugar Camps. The Sugar Camp goes off the air at the end of this program.
But that does not mean the end of Steve being
no,
on the air.
No, it doesn't.
Because you're going to usher in something else.
Yeah.
You got a name for it?
I do.
Oh.
334578.
Oh, and those are magic numbers.
They're not my measurements.
No, I can see that from here.
Yeah, I'm glad you can.
But I know that for those who are not mathematically inclined, it means RPMs.
RPMs, it does.
33 and a third, 45 RPM with a big hole in it, and 78s.
That's right. So it's going to be an all-vinyl show, mostly all from my record collection. And we're going to start that off next week here on CIUT 3345.
I have to be a part of that.
I will. You know, you have to come back because we're going to have to go into the world of Danny Kaye. And I've got a Danny Kaye record. And we got more to talk about, I think, Don.
I think we have a whole lot more to share.
That would be really great.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been great having you as a guest on the program today.
Thanks for the pumpkin pie.
We did. We brought in pie.
Oh.
The last of the Sugar Camp pumpkin pies.
Oh, my. You know, give me a piece of pie.
You can always listen to all kinds of Sugar Camp music radio programs if you go to the 3Ws.backtothesugarcamp.com. On my Camp Streams page, you can find them there, and you can always email me, steve@backtothesugarcamp.com.
And
with
if you
all
like,
your, yes?
If you like what you heard, by the way, we would really appreciate it if you'd send us just a little bread so that we can go ahead with what was just said. We need some donation money, honey.
Beautifully done. Don Franks has been my guest here on the Sugar Camp tonight.
Steve has been my host.
Yes, I have. And it's been just a pleasure going through all this stuff. I only got through a very small portion of what I wanted to get through, but I knew that in advance. But, you know, you take off more than you can chew, right?
Oh, yes. So many girls, so little time. Same with music.
Yeah. So if you like this program, tell your friends about it and tell them to go to the 3Ws.backtothesugarcamp.com and listen to it there, because Don Franks is a very, very special man, and so is Lenny Bro, and so is, of course, Richard Lord Buckley, who we've just been listening to. So
Lenny Bruce sometime soon.
Lenny Bruce, we have to get into that, you know.
Yes, please.
Because that's on vinyl. And anything else that you have idea-wise?
Too many to share with you at this time.
This sounds ominously good. I like it.
Delicious.
I first got into Lord Buckley through Frank Zappa, actually, because I was a big Mother's Invention fan, and I got to meet him.
Wow.
And, yeah, and he said that he was starting a record company called Straight Records, and I said, well, who's going to be on to it? He says, well, Wild Man Fisher, the Girls Together Outrageously, and Lord Buckley.
Oh, man.
And he put out this album called The Most Immaculately Hip Aristocrat. Oh, and that's how I got into it. The first thing I heard was
loved it.
Yeah, well, the bad rappings of the Marquis de Sade was a bit over my head at the time. But you know what? 40 years later, I still listen to it and still hear new things.
That's right. And a friend of mine said, if you don't like Frank Zappa, it's because he's singing about you.
And so true. I just have to check and see what I've got in the turntable here to make sure I've got the right thing queued up. Aha! It was the wrong one. Good thing I checked, eh?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so we're going to take the train out of here tonight. Now, people out there that know Mark Haynes and the Zippers, Mark Haynes loves this. He used to do it all the time, the beginning of the train from Lord Buckley. Canadian actor Richard Donat, big Lord Buckley fan. He's on the front cover of a Bob Dylan album. I think it's the second album that Dylan did, on the mantelpiece in a living room with his girlfriend. There's a picture of Lord Buckley. So he's a very well-respected guy. We're going to play The Train to take us out. Don Franks, thanks ever so much for everything.
All aboard.
Train's now leaving for Ronsdale, Gonsdale, Flipsdale, Jam City, Rats, Cross, Crisscross, Ratitude, Latitude, Batitude, Hattitude, Nogsley, Dogsley, Frogsley, Homestown, Bombstown, Your Town, My Town, Way Place, Say Place, Gay Place, Routney, Voutney, Fitney, Schnicks, Now, Crasscraw, Assabaw, Avalanche, Ponce, Pye, Farsville, Darsville, Harsville, Parsville, Crenley, Benley, Senhoff, and Kootenay, now leaving on track 12. Boop! Woo! Tickets, please. Poppity-bop, poppity-bop, boobity-boobity-boobity-boop, poppity-bop, poppity-bop, boobity-boobity-boobity-boop. Tickets, please. Let's get our tickets out here. Tickets, please. Peanuts, popcorn, get them on the red hot. Tickets, please. Tickets, please. Let's get our tickets out here. Hoppity-bop, hoppity-bop, boobity-boobity-boobity-boop, hoppity-bop, hoppity-bop, boobity-boobity-boobity-boop. Tickets, please. Tickets.
Last call for the diner.
How we doing, Fred?
Right on time, Charlie.
Tickets, please. Let's have our tickets out here. Hoppity-boop, hoppity-boop, boobity-boobity-boobity-boop, hoppity-boop, hoppity-boop, boobity-boobity-boobity-boop, hoppity-boop, hoppity-boop, boobity-boobity-boobity-boop. Tickets, please. Let's get our tickets. Hubbity-boop, hubbity-boop, bibbity-bibbity-bibbity-bibbity, hubbity-boop, hubbity-boop, bibbity-bibbity-bibbity.
Last call for the diner. What's the matter over there, Charlie? I don't know, Fred. You look like you're stuck. I didn't pull the lid. There we go.
Hubbity-boop, hubbity-boop, bibbity-bibbity-bibbity-bibbity, hubbity-boop, hubbity-boop,
bibbity-bibbity-bibbity. What are you doing there, Charlie? I'm trying to do the lesson.
Hubbity-boop, hubbity-boop, bibbity-bibbity-bibbity-bibbity, hubbity-boop, hubbity-boop.
Hey, get your stretcher, Fred. I'll let him do it. Lift all right. Help, help. What's got the ambulance coming now? 27 dead and 14 injured.
And that's it. That's it for the Sugar Camp. Steve Frubin over and out for the last time on the camp.